listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, 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 live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, December 15th. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter. I'll have to get that in post. Somehow, I apologize to those listening. Somehow the music got put on repeat. I must have hit a button by accident and didn't realize it. Must be a short key in my keyboard, shortcut. So unfortunately, while I was going through that, the pre-programmed music started cycling. So my apologies. But all right, getting on to tonight's topic, moving past our mistakes and moving on with the future. No, I'm sorry. Our topic tonight is actually animal consciousness. And, you know, this is kind of, you know, something that I'm looking forward to talking about because I've always... You know, I've always been fascinated with how an animal thinks, how it perceives the world, its level of consciousness. You know, what does it mean to experience life as something other than human? So I think there's a lot of different avenues we can go on this topic.
Well, maybe you were a dog in a past life.
Well, we wouldn't hope so. Those are the best.
Well, okay, just for those, for the sake of those who are listening, Buddhists happen to believe that we can incarnate into different life forms in each lifetime. That's why everything is interconnected. One of my old teachers, Frank Appleyard, one of my first mentors, felt that everything has its own frequency of energy, and that it's kind of like within an animal kingdom would be those frequencies. Birds, for instance, certain birds, and you know, that would stay within that unless that energy evolved. But would that come back as a human? Not likely, in his view. So, mm-hmm. You know, I've given that some thought over the years. Ultimately, we don't know, Michael. It's just conjecture and theoretical.
There's
but
nothing more fun than conjecture.
I know it's true. Animal consciousness, I happen to be of the mind that every life form has its own frequency of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and actually in preparing for this program tonight, Mike, I was thinking about chickens. And I know it's a silly thing. I saw some little TikTok thing with chickens, right? Mm-hmm. And I used to raise birds, chickens, geese, and ducks. And all of my chickens had different personalities. Now, their main thing is just to eat and lay eggs. They don't care.
Did you?
You know, it's what they don't bother with. But each of them, and it didn't matter even the breed. Let's say it's one particular breed of bird. Yeah, they had tendencies. Like a certain breed would have, you know, certain... tendencies is the only word I can say here. But each of them would have their own personalities. Like I had this one little brown hen. Don't ask me how we started it, but she would come and peck at my back door for cookies. And I guess one day she pecked at the door. I gave her a cookie, and every morning she would come and, you know, peck at the door. And she was the only one who caught on to it. The others, I guess, were too stupid to say, oh, she's got cookies, you know. But, you know, that was our thing. And I really believe that they do have their own consciousness. I remember at that time on one farm I lived, I was helping the neighbor look after his cows. Now, I come from a farm with my grandparents and such, and this farmer believed that cows were basically stupid, and his were wild. And they were in the pen, and, geez, within a few days, I had lots of them coming up and taking food out of my hand. And he'd say, why are you doing that? And I said, because they are living beings and deserve attention, and I'm right here. And he said, oh, they're just, you know, cows are stupid. And I thought that, you know, cows really only care about eating and looking after their babies, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, however, they each had different personalities. Now, you talk to horse people, and they'll tell you absolutely horses have different personalities.
Oh, yeah.
And
I'd say horses are probably a level of intelligence higher than cows, but...
I agree. But some people have trained cows.
Oh,
some
sure.
People have trained bison. You know?
I've seen, cows that almost act like dogs with their ranchers and things, which, I'm not going to think about when I go to get a burger or a steak, but, it is interesting that, just as you said earlier, every animal has its own frequency, and I am an avid believer that, maybe that in a different way of saying it would be every animal is somewhere on the spectrum of awareness. This is something that my father, Dr. Kelly, and I have talked about. And, I think you and I, Dr. Hunter, as well. But, even plant life has a level of awareness.
Yes.
So, don't feel
proven
too high and
science,
mighty, vegetarians.
No.
They can feel pain.
Yeah.
But.
So I think that when it comes to animal consciousness, are they conscious as we are? Now, again, part of what I wanted to maybe address tonight is for us to understand that animals don't think in language, like in our language. Like, they don't think in English, and they don't think in German, or they don't think in French. They don't have that articulation. If we think of this psychically, they are more sensory beings that think in pictures and feelings. And I've proven this to myself over the years more times than I can count. And it's more that sensory. So if the challenge, I think, for people is to think without words. And that's very difficult because we're taught to think in words, and mm-hmm. we consider that our intelligence.
Well,
so when we're framing an understanding of other life forms and intelligence and consciousness, we're thinking about the process of words. But every life form has its own language.
Sure.
And we have to consider that their language is their words. So, I'd have to know chicken to be able to talk to chickens.
I would think a lot of it is a mixture of, maybe the tones, pace of sounds they make, body language and context, things like that. I absolutely do. Well, I was going to also say that to think in verbal language, to have that, it is part of being the human animal. And, I've talked about being the human animal before, and of course, I don't mean that you just live by your base instincts. Part of being the human animal is being a creature of reason, of higher intelligence, of higher ability. But we are animals nonetheless, and I think we're on that same continuum of life. I don't believe, as many of the Abrahamic religions believe, that human beings are some kind of divine creature separate from the natural world. I believe humans are very, very much part of the natural world. And I think that, thinking in language is part of our existence. It's part of how we exist as animals. And moving on to, you had mentioned, Dr. Hunter, that there are animals that have their own language. I think when we look at orca whales, commonly known as killer whales, which is rather a misnomer, but orcas are very intelligent. They're a species of dolphin, and they are, I think, the most intelligent of the dolphins or whales. I know dolphins are highly intelligent as well, but orcas are known to have a language, a verbal language. They're known to have different dialects depending on which part of the world they're in, and they're known to operate in complex social groups. They have planning, they think in the abstract, they plan ahead, and they do it to a sophisticated degree. So, how different from us are they really?
I totally agree with you, and that's where, if we open our minds as metaphysicians to just address that possibility that they are equal to us, but in a different form, in a different environment,
right.
In a different expression, then maybe we would have more respect for nature in understanding that all life form is conscious.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that we really need to re-examine. Yeah, I'm going to get on a little soapbox here. We need to re-examine our policy of keeping animals captive in zoos and SeaWorld, things like that. Now, I do think that there are animals that are perfectly fine in captivity. They might, you know, they could care less. It's not based on what creature it is. But, you know, predators especially, that's kind of rough. Although I think it can be done, but any, you know, primates, any dolphins, orcas, anything like that, they're too intelligent to be held in captivity. It's almost like a crime.
I agree. You know, Mike T, if I can just sidebar here for a sec, Mike T is saying in the chat, another very intelligent creature is the octopus. Hugely intelligent creature.
Absolutely.
Now, that gave me the thought, too, that in the UK now, it's illegal to, okay, everybody, bear with me, kill a lobster by boiling, because that's conventionally how people have done it. Take a live lobster, put it in a pot of boiling water. But they're saying now that that's cruel. They have to find other ways to do this because it's now illegal, because it's a conscious being.
You know, if
and I think that this is what you're talking about, Michael, where we have to up our game here and do things with a little more sensitivity. Now,
oh, I agree completely.
Not that we need to talk about this topic, but people who are, you know, against eating meat for, you know, their own reasons, so being vegetarian, I can't kill an animal kind of thing. Science now knows, so this is my argument, science now knows that plants actually have responses and reactions to the environment, and so are plants conscious? Now, I don't know. Like, I can't totally answer that.
How do you define it?
I mean, it's a life form.
Right. We know that it has a measure of awareness in that it responds to stimuli and it changes its behavior based on environmental context. It's much slower to do so. It's, you know, it's not to the same level of complexity as animal life, but it is awareness. And its measure. Furthermore,
it's absolutely measurable.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you know, just to, you know, maybe wear my beliefs in my sleeve for a moment here, and talk, since we're talking about animals and animal consciousness, you know, my personal take is, I believe that human beings are part of the natural world, and I think that meat is part of that too. But I would put me in charge of the world. I would absolutely ban factory farming. I think that just because we eat meat does not mean that the animal has to suffer its entire existence. I think that we should honor life and limit suffering whenever possible. I think that should be a cornerstone.
And that may be a way for the future. As it is, it's economics that rule that, and there's a lot of people that don't think like we do necessarily, Michael. And human beings have been known to hoard, you know. We like to hoard. We like things easy. We like to, you know, harvest more than we can sell and use and sell.
Yeah.
And so there has been, I think that there has been some great strides made in the last even 10 years for whether it's chicken farms or, you know, dairy farms and so on, that, you know, they're taken to task now for cruelty and in what you can, whatever inhumane means.
Mm-hmm.
I guess then we have to define what's humane, because human beings, I don't know. So I agree with you. But this, you know, this going to hunt your food, you know, bring it home and go through the process, this ritualistic process of honoring what you eat, you know, is left still to indigenous people who continue to live that way. So in the primary world, you know, we're talking about, you know, capitalistic, so on worlds. For a lot of other reasons we don't necessarily need to go into, we just, you know, act like we don't care. and we're not giving thought to that. And yet, right, as metaphysicians, this is something that would be a natural process for us to say, what is consciousness? Who is conscious? What is, you know, and have more regard, because we are, as Dr. Kelly would say, we are on a planet where everything eats everything. Mm-hmm. That's how you sustain, you know, life on Earth. You know, whether it's a cat eating a mouse, you know, the lion eating the, you know, I mean, it's, this is the way it goes. Elephants eat trees, and, you know, it kind of, it's that cycle of life.
Yeah.
So we can't feel bad for being part of that cycle of life, but we can certainly do it with more regard, understanding, right, that everything is conscious.
You know, pay honor to the life that sacrificed, well, that gave its life, or we took its life so that we could continue to live. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with being part of this cycle. It is the way of the world. It is who we are. It is not just us. It's nature. It is the very fabric of our existence. But don't let it tarnish your respect for life. And when we examine animal consciousness and we realize that they're not as different from what it is to be human as we really think it is,
I agree.
Then it puts things in a different perspective.
You know, one other thing I'll say about the Buddhist community that I appreciate is that not taking a life. However, there are certain members of the community or the culture who are capable of doing that, and that's what their assignment is to take the life. Like, there are only these very few people who are assigned to, let's say, kill the goats or kill the beef, or, you know, that's what
so
they do.
They just round up the sociopaths and have them be the butcher.
But it's all done with regard, you see, and it's still done with prayers. It's still done with respect for life. So it's a very ritualistic experience for those who do it. But those who do not do it respect those who do it, because it's part of this necessity. Now, I think in past programs we've talked about that place you have to go to in your mind where you check out and become unconscious in order to take life. And it, for me, it's serious PTSD. I've had to do it, you know, when I've had a suffering chicken or...
Yeah.
Oh, man, I tell you, it just sends me. And so I'm not good at that. I'm really not. It's not my thing. However, thankfully, I have a son-in-law who's okay to do that. So when we have harvested in the fall, I say, can you please, you know, we need these 10 chickens. He will do the deed and we can clean them. I don't have a problem cleaning them. I have a problem taking the life. So he can go there in his mind and then come right back out again. And this is why I have that respect for the Buddhist community, and I have respect for people who can do it with regard, with respect, and with that understanding that this is not a who you are, it's what is the deed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And again, respecting the consciousness of these creatures. And trust me,
respecting their dignity.
Prayers before and after.
And, you know, I think that's something that's very much lost. Trying to do your best to respect their dignity, which I know is hard to say when you kill something, you know, skin it, bleed it, and then chop it up to eat. But it is life-giving. It is what has enabled our species to continue and exist. And, you know, and by the way, nothing against vegetarians. My aunt's a vegetarian. I've had friends that are vegetarian.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I went through that phase myself. And I think that there's a lot of good reasons to do it. Some people do it for health. Some people do it for, you know, philosophical, ethical reasons. And there's nothing wrong with it, especially in the modern era when you can get protein from a lot of sources. You know, there's ways to thrive. But
well, there's a large population of India that has no access to meat. So they have found ways between rice and beans and a couple of other things that makes up for the protein of meat.
Yeah.
And it's not hard to research, everybody, if you want to go on Google and find that out. But I'm with you. I've been vegetarian certain points in my life. I eat very little meat, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But my body does better with some meat. Now, I don't think that we have evolved a lot of DNA and our biological makeup has come far enough that we can just suddenly make that transition. Not everybody can adapt well to a vegetarian diet. And although whatever your ethics may be, your philosophy may be, you have to be very, very careful to ensure that your body is still getting enough of those proteins and enzymes, or you start to risk things in the liver, kidneys, but especially through the digestive tract, from hydrochloric acid to intrinsic factor. And there's a whole number of other enzymes. There's three primary enzymes in the digestive tract. If you risk one of those, it does have a ripple effect through the body. So you have to know what you're doing, mm-hmm. you know, and that's really important. So, Dr. Edwards saying, anyone remember the movie Avatar, which yeah. I watched a dozen times.
It's a great movie. Great flick.
I know. I love it.
I mean, and it does have a lot of similar themes to Dances with yeah. Wolves, but both are fantastic movies, actually.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Edward, if I can say this, he's just saying yeah. he's remembering the movie where the hunters would actually thank the creature they had just killed. And, Edward, that is my experience in my life and living with indigenous communities. It's all very ritualistic.
Yeah.
Nothing goes without regard, and there is no waste.
And that's a wonderful way to do it.
Disrespectful. Disrespectful to the animal to waste.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say this on that point. First off, you know, I agree with Dr. Edward. I've been thinking about the whole time. And, you know, please don't sue us, James Cameron. We love your work. And, but yeah, Avatar, you know, that was a very touching moment where they would just value life in that way. And of course, it's a necessary part of the cycle, but it doesn't mean you have to be cruel about it. And, you know, that made some great points. But
I think that's consciousness too. We're yeah. raising our consciousness to understand the cycle of life and thanking the consciousness of that creature. And if that makes sense.
Oh, of course.
Nature is very brutal, if you yeah. watch any.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, my God.
You know, I've seen some people that, and I don't know where you stand on this, Dr. Hunter, but I've seen people say that, you know, of course, human beings are by and far the most violent animals that have ever existed. And are we, though? We're smart. We're very smart, which means we can pretty much do anything that we think about. But if you take some of the, you know, extremely aggressive creatures out there and gave them human-level intelligence, would they be just kind of cool and do their own thing?
Well, I think the difference being, Michael, I don't know of any animals in nature, off the top of my head, that kill just for the sake of killing, unless there's something wrong with them,
like cats.
They're sick, you know, or, you know, rabies. There's a number of diseases that can happen with any animal that can cause them to be aggressive and kill for no reason. But largely, of the animal kingdom in mm. its, you know, natural state, only takes what it requires.
And I would argue that it is. I mean, this is just me pulling this out of thin air. I don't know that anybody has this, but I would think that humans in our earlier state, in the hunter-gatherer state, I would have said that I think we're probably very much the same. And it's because we didn't have the energy, we didn't have the time, we didn't have the resources to just go out and hunt for the sheer sake of it. You know, that's a luxury. And furthermore, I do think it has something to do with the intense level of intelligence that we have. It's given us the ability to do things that no other animal has. You know, free will is about choosing what's on the menu, and having a human level of intelligence is indicating that you have a lot more in terms of what is possible. I've said it before, and I do believe in this, that humanity shows the entire spectrum of the natural world. You will never find a creature that is more evil and vile than a human being can be, and you will never find a creature that is, okay, we're going to just leave dogs out of this, but you can never find a creature that is more wonderful and pure of heart and intent and of kindness than a human, because our intelligence allows us to fully experience that spectrum. Again, not counting dogs, those are pure.
Dr. Edward is saying in the chat, we are in a stage where interactions with nature is at times cruel and violent. He says, I suspect that our collective consciousness, as our collective consciousness increases, our harmony with nature will flow much better. And I completely agree. And with what you're saying, Michael, we are both vile and wonderful at the same time. Mm-hmm. That's kind of an irony about human beings. But that's what we're having to relearn, because we're forced in it. If we couldn't just sit back and observe and say, hey, you know, you really shouldn't cut those trees down because blah, blah, you know, no, we have to learn about it. Oh, trees are gone. look what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
So we're learning the hard way. Whether it's in, you know, all respect to people throughout the U.S. right now with the tornadoes, that's brutal. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, nature is, she fights back. You know, things, and I know somebody might say to me, well, what do you mean, she? You know, well, let's just say that in the law of physics, there's equal and opposite reactions. And, you know, we're having to now look at our regard for the planet and the environment. We have to. Like, and if we don't, well, see you on the next life.
Well,
that's the way it'll go.
You know, and again, just kind of another interesting way to look at this, and we're going to tie this around real quick to something completely off topic, climate change. But, you know, climate change, it's not like it's, human beings are never going to completely destroy the Earth. We can't. You know, bigger and badder things than us have tried. But we can screw it up for ourselves. And we can screw it up for a lot of other life forms out there. But life will continue. The Earth will continue. When we talk about climate change and environmentalism, it honestly is selfish and self-serving. The reason to do it is, yes, it's good for the world. It is living in balance. But it's also selfish because it is how we can continue to thrive and survive and live in a wonderful world, is by adhering to that balance, to that cohesion, to that respect for the natural world around us.
I agree. If I can just add this before anybody want a card, it's going to be coming up on that time. We can take some cards.
Very much is.
I would like to just say what Audra has written in the chat, Michael. She says, I was deboning chicken the other night and kept saying thank you to every piece I used and feeling grateful.
Uh-huh.
I do the same thing, Audra.
Yeah.
But she also states, I think I started doing it after learning what indigenous people did when hunting. Also, my grandma told me to tell the chickens thank you when we got the eggs when I was a baby, so it stuck.
That is a wonderful story.
It is. And this is how we raise our consciousness. So, and tuning in, you also start to build your auto-sensory perception. You start to open up your intuition. And if you could just push that pause button to say, oh, this was a life. And thank you for giving me life. You know, that's consciousness in operation, if you will. And it's one thing about, it's like saying a blessing before you eat. It's not really a religious thing at all, everybody would say. It's taking that moment to be grateful. But it also sends all those messages through the body to rest, relax, and begin that digestive process, kind of like Pavlov's thing, you know, start drooling before you eat, you know, knowing there's food. But if you take that moment, and it does raise your consciousness, but and also tuning into the consciousness of all other things on Earth. And I think that's a key here, because when we grow up, we'll learn more. Right, and tune in better, and understand that all life, I think, has its own level of consciousness, and we have to be respectful of that.
Absolutely. You know, I've gone through several phases of not eating pork, not for religious reasons, but because, you know, pigs are very intelligent, more than people give them credit for, very much on par or exceeding that of a dog, and I just couldn't bear the thought of, you know, those factory farm conditions where they can't move and things like that, not to be too much of a downer. But I just couldn't do it. So, you know, now I still avoid it a lot. There is, you know, you can get, I can't remember the term, essentially the equivalent of free range.
Mm.
It's more expensive, yeah. It's organic, you know, but I think it's worth paying more to try to live in a better world. But that's all I have to say about that, as Mr. Gump would say.
And and if I can just say before we draw cards, starting with Edward, Michael, if you've mm-hmm. your cards ready, buy local, people. Try to, you know, research through your, you know, local farmers markets, your local vendors, and buying local. I think free trade, in my view, is out of hand. I refuse to buy meat from New Zealand. Can't imagine how long it's been in the freezer. You know, a lot of poultry is sent to China from the U.S.
Yeah.
It's processed there and then sent back. Absolutely refuse that. The sooner we start being more attentive to where everything comes from, the more we're going to get back in balance, because this hole for the buck has to stop right here.
Well, I agree with a lot of that. I think that with a growing population, we're going to have ways to feed it, but I think we can do it in a humane way. And I think the worst thing about getting, you know, different product from around the world in places like New Zealand is the economic and environmental cost of transporting it. You know, you can get some stuff quick and fresh, but how much, you know, carbon are you putting in the atmosphere, how much are you spending to do it? And I think that we can buy local and buy from local farmers, ranchers. I think that's a great thing. But I think there does have to be a balance. But I do appreciate your viewpoint, comrade.
Well, I'm always right, Michael.
Well, of course. I would never, never would I argue that.
Anyway, on the lighter side. That's fun. Okay, let's get on to some cards. I've enjoyed this conversation, so thanks, Michael.
Well,
and everybody with
you.
Their input.
But all right, so I guess we're getting to that time of the evening. We're going to be drawing some cards. And as you said, Dr. Hunter, Dr. Edward is up first. And bear with me just one moment.
Shuffle, shuffle.
Well, I already drew the card, but found it. The booklet that I read from fell off the desk. So a little behind the scenes peek, guys. But Dr. Edward, I have a good one. Wild card number 8, freedom. Freedom is a state of being. It is an unencumbered mind that can remain open and move forward. Freedom is the ability to recreate the self, shedding old ideas that no longer serve any purpose for present and future evolution. Freedom is the knowing of who and what one is as a free and sovereign being of the universe. Freedom means one can be or do anything one wants within the limits of do no harm and do right.
Oh, I am so going to sound like a fortune teller here, Michael. The 6 of diamonds. I think you have a little money coming to, your way, Edward. And if it, in some other way, an opportunity to earn some more money coming to you. So that freedom, the freedom to be perhaps entrepreneurial, or at least a little something, there's something extra coming. Beats me what that means. That's where I'm going. So
good message.
Yeah.
All right.
I hope so. He'll have to keep us posted. We have Jamil up next.
All right, Jamil, I pulled number 28, do no harm, do right. Foundational card. Do no harm, do right is the most powerful principle to live by. Doing no harm includes words and actions to the self and others. Doing right means to also take positive action where there is a need, without infringing on the free will or rights of others. Always strive for the highest good for all concerned, including yourself. Do no harm and do right establishes the foundation for all other principles.
Ooh, Jamil, first of all, I'm going to preface this by saying none of us is exempt from having a hard day or not getting frustrated at times. We all do.
Isn't that the truth?
But, you know, again, we don't draw it very often, but I'm going to go with it. I drew the devil card. That's simply conflict. Think of it as the place of gray between black and white, that place of uncertainty, that place of, oh, you know, it doesn't feel good. So I said, okay, what's this about? And I picked out the Six of Spades. It's kind of like you're in your direction, but you can feel a lot of interruptions. So that do no harm, do right. In support of, if you're feeling, you know, that everywhere you go, there's porcupine quills. Just do the thing. You know, put a smile on your face, say this too shall pass, and stay true to your pathway. And I know I make it sound so easy, don't I? It's not. It challenges us to say, who am I? And I got to say, in this day and age, I see way more frustrated people. I work part-time in retail. Way more demanding people, way more like, oh, my.
Oh, yeah.
And I just say, oh, the poor soul.
You know? And
stay true to myself.
A poor soul they are. We see that in, you know, travelers on aircraft as well. You know, airplane passengers have been getting more and more unruly. But
yeah, it's tough to deal with. But, Jamil, if there's something going on, you're moving forward, but you're feeling a little bit aggravated, just do the thing. Oh, this too shall pass. You know, just
absolutely.
Know where it's all coming from. So I really hope that makes sense to you. You know, because we all have a challenging day or a challenging week, and boy, the last 2 years has certainly presented their share.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right, we rolling have Dr. Raven up. Sorry, Michael.
Oh, I was just going to say, rolling with it can be easier said than done, but nothing worth doing is easy. But you are correct. I was also going to bring up Dr. Raven as our next card, and I have number 7, Self-Mastery.
Good one.
To know who you are and why you are who you are is self-actualization. To choose and walk your own path is self-determination, giving inner peace. Not allowing others to dictate your behavior is self-control. Remain true to your convictions. This is self-mastery towards the path of self-completeness. I don't know if you pulled that one in a while. Good card.
I don't think so. Raven, in support of that, the tarot was saying Six of Hearts, and I really like that. It's self-mastery is kind of like who you are and your community, your commitments, your promises, you know, and what to honor. Maybe there's other things going to the wayside now, but again, staying true to your own self-mastery and to your network, your family, extended family. And it's perhaps taking inventory of that right now. And, you know, life calls us to do that from time to time. So, I think this is a positive affirmation for you, to be honest. You got some good people in your corner.
Very nice.
All right.
All right. I believe we have Audra next.
That's what I have.
All right. Audra, I have number 5, Respect for Free Will. Respect for Free Will is the suit. Law of Control is the card. Differences are inevitable. Diversity is desirable. The Law of Control says that you cannot change or control others, but you can have a positive impact or influence. Control only that to which you are entitled to control. Do not give unsolicited advice. Respect that everyone has the same rights to self-creation and decisions. You can accept present circumstances as they are, lobby for change, or leave.
Audra, I got the star. Isn't that a bright, shiny moment? Free will, law of control, and the star is... I feel compelled to say to you, you're not trapped. In fact, you're quite free to do whatever you will, however you choose. And life is like water at the moment, and there is a flow of ebbs and tides. And there's, and in my mind's eye, I'm seeing something that's synchronistic for you, kind of like a wish coming true. And again, I know I sound like a fortune teller, but you know, keep yourself in check, stay true to yourself, so the you know, all these other energies can set up for you to synchronize, because I think you got something really good coming your way really soon too. You know, before we get on to Dr. Jeff, I'd like to just say some comments in the chat, particularly from Jamil, bless him. He said there's been some challenges on the way along the way for him, but I do feel like I'm moving forward and that good things are coming for you soon. I totally agree, Jamil. It's again not to be So when I say like these porcupine quills, those challenges, you just got to say, very often when I have challenges, I say, well, this is something to do, you know, and oh, there's something else to do. Well, how am I going to get around this one? And just take those pauses and breathe during that. But you absolutely are moving forward. So keep going, because that's what it also said. Just keep on your pathway and good things are coming.
Very nice.
Now we have Dr. Jeff.
All right. And Dr. Jeff, I have number 16, the continuity of life. Human consciousness transcends the physical body, allowing a new chapter of life to continue. Stability and peace is assured with continuity and the flow of day-to-day life. There is reason to hope for a favorable outcome in the face of adversity or a difficult situation. You are a living example of the continuity of life. Cherished values will continue to live and grow. Sometimes we must allow a current chapter to close so that a new chapter may begin.
Nine of Hearts, Jeff. That's abundance. So imagine that wherever things have emptied, it is now filling up. And there is this continual resurgence. You know, continuity of life is absolutely the best terminology to use when I see that Nine of Hearts, because it is that continual renewal and replenishment that's occurring in your life. And I feel like in the turn of the new year, you're going to take a big breath and say, wow, that's good. I'm looking forward now. So I think that's awesome. So again, thanks for the feedback.
Yeah, we've been getting some good feedback in the chat today.
Yeah, she said it's relevant to situations she's been navigating. Dr. Raven says that resonated completely. Confirmation hits home. So thanks again. You know, sometimes we don't make sense of what we're saying, but we can only trust and hope that it makes sense to somebody else. And if it doesn't today, maybe it will tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I mean, I really want to encourage people. You know, Michael and I are still going to be here for the rest of the year and next year, but
we're going to be here forever. We're not going anywhere.
It is, next week is the 22nd. The week after is the 29th. And then we're saying goodbye to 2021. So in us all expanding our consciousness and but still acknowledging that, look, we've all had some challenging times. These past couple of years, man, that's crazy. It's a ride. But there's still things to be grateful for.
Oh, absolutely.
There's still that gratitude. And as we're going into Yuletide of, you know, next Tuesday, the full moon is this weekend, by the way, everyone. And Tuesday is Yuletide. This is the time of renewal and awakenings and allowing things to sleep what it needs to sleep, because it's, ooh, it's taking a breath, it's resting, you know, it has to do that for new life to be created. And think of yourself in that way. You know, you're, I know in the hustle and bustle of the season and, you know, whatever's going around, feeling you're busy, just remember to take those moments to say, you know, I might need a longer sleep tonight, and I might need a day to just watch TV in my pajamas. And take that time. But then also remind yourself that, you know, there is lots to be grateful for. And honestly, I do think about floods and fires and tornadoes, and I say, oh, I am so blessed. I really do. And I don't have, let's say, what so-and-so down the street has, but I got way more than the other guy down that street. So whatever we have is worthy of our gratitude. And where people are hurting, they are worthy of our attention. They are every life form, animal, otherwise, and human, we are to serve. Mm-hmm. We're to serve each other and lend a hand where we can. So I would challenge everybody, go buy a $5, I don't know, coffee card and just hand it out to somebody on the street randomly.
It's that whole thing of pay it forward.
It's paying it forward, but it's serving.
Yeah.
You see somebody out there, you know, he's got his hat out for some change, throw in a coffee cart.
Yeah.
You know, if change isn't something you're comfortable with doing, then you know that's going toward a coffee or a sandwich. And just do that one little thing. It elevates our energy. It elevates our consciousness.
Very well said. And, you know, just, well, how can I possibly improve upon that?
My little speech.
But all I can do is say that I completely agree. And it's, you know, it is making the world that we want to live in. My favorite cliche. But,
you know, I say that, and I'm very sincere when I say that, Michael. Part of me was starting to tear up a little bit because as tough as we get and as older and wiser that we get and we become more actual how things are and accepting of the way it is, and we don't fight small stuff anymore,
mm-hmm.
we feel deeper.
Yeah.
And we feel deeper for our situation. We feel deeper for the planet. We feel deeper for people and animals and all things. You feel deeper, but we still have to accept what's actual and deal with actual things. And we can't be naive about that. We can't be ignorant about that. We have to be educated and sensible and universal and think long-term, not short-term and reactive. So I'm not trying to be unrealistic, but I truly feel that love, and if we understand that love is an action, it's not love just automatically makes it better. We decide how love acts. And that's really the point of it all. You know, love is, but love is decided.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
That's my further speech. Aren't you glad for part two?
Well, we could not have wrapped up the evening without part two.
You know, I wish everybody a happy Yuletide. Happy full moon, happy Yuletide. We're closing 2021, and I'd like it all just to end on a very good tone saying thank you very much, 2021, and kiss it goodbye.
Thank God you weren't 2020, but you weren't terribly much better. Do better for 2022. We can all come together and make 2022 better than 2020 and 2021 combined.
<I know.
laughs> But, you know, it's been a great conversation with you, Dr. Hunter. I appreciate you so much.
And
I appreciate everybody taking the time to join us. Again, your feedback and chat is invaluable. It adds a dynamic presence that we really appreciate. And so thank you for that. And, you know, don't know if we have a topic for next week yet, but we'll, of course, be sending that out by email, and we look forward to having you join us. And Dr. Hunter, any other last thoughts before we wrap up tonight?
Listen, learn, think. Oh, I'm missing something, Michael.
Grow
and live. That's the way to do it.
That's the way. Thank you so much, Dr. Hunter. Thank you, everyone. Good night, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Good night.